offensive needs come draft time. Welcome, Bird Gang. On today's show, Zach Gershman joins me. The man's been busy. Our annual draft primer series on azcardinals.com is underway. A position-by-position look at the team's draft needs. The offense takes center stage this week. Plus, the latest on the top 30 visits. But first, what everyone is talking about on this Monday. It's Cardinals Cover 2, Episode 742, and it starts now.
Welcome to Cardinals Cover 2.
Buda Baker, what heart, what threat. This guy's unbelievable.
Cardinals Cover 2 is presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals, and by Arizona Cardinals Podcasts. Visit azcardinals.com/podcasts.
He's at the 10, at the 5, he's in again! Some more Murray magic!
Wow!
Here's Craig Grealer.
So as we speak here during this Cardinals Cover 2 presented by Hyundai recording on a Monday late morning, Zach, we are in the midst of a solar eclipse, partial eclipse here in Arizona. But as I look outside the window behind you, it's pretty bright out. So I'm not expecting much, at least here in Arizona. But it is the talk of the world, literally the world, on what's going on here on this Monday, April 8th.
I have an unpopular opinion.
Oh, here we go.
I don't see the hype.
See? Oh, did you do that on purpose? No pun intended. The see? Because you're not supposed
no,
to look.
Okay. Good call. No, that's a knee slapper.
Okay.
No, I don't see the hype with the solar eclipse. If you want to see dark, just go out at 9 p.m. at night and just look outside. And even then, you don't need glasses. Just go do it.
It doesn't happen. Okay, it happens a lot. But in the U.S., it doesn't happen a lot. In fact, the next time is in 20 years. So, yes, it's a big deal. But watching the crowds in Mexico, Texas, and that entire totality, I'm not basing my travel schedule or my day around a solar eclipse. If it happens, great.
I agree. I'm happy for other people that are happy and like want to see it, and like they could tell like their kids and their grandkids, and I will just tell mine like it happened. Like
Google it.
Like at this point, I'm sure with, you know, 20 years from now, like with VR and everything like that, you might be able to have a solar eclipse any day of the week you want, or just cover your eyes and say it's dark outside.
Okay, that is a very unpopular take.
And I know that, like, okay. I get it. It's for the moment, the memory. Like, oh, okay, it happened. Like, I got to experience it. I got to put on the glasses. Like, OMG. But I don't know.
Okay.
Today was a regular, you know, Monday.
It's just a Monday. It's the start of another week and another day closer to the draft. You like the transition?
I do. I will say we have the shades.
I'm going to keep the window open.
I know. So if it suddenly starts to get darker in here, and you know, you hear me scream or something like that, then we could always say like, all right, Zach, you said one thing in the beginning. Yes. Now you said something entirely different, but. Let's get into it, Craig.
All right. So from the solar eclipse to what we hope the Arizona Cardinals do in less than 3 weeks' time, and this is a big week. You've been very busy. At least that's what you tell me. You've been very busy.
Something
but this
like
is the week in which we always do this each year, and it's kind of fallen on your shoulders now, but the draft primers, position by position, looking at potential needs or real needs for the Cardinals, at least what we think are needs, not knowing how the front office views certain needs. But there are obvious candidates as far as whether it's a high, medium, or low need. And this week, you're focusing on the offense. And on Monday, it was wide receiver. We'll go through kind of each one of these, but it's all up on azcardinals.com. Each day, a different position group. And then next week, you focus on the defense. But this week is offense. And I do think that the biggest need offensively, and I think everyone should be in agreement on this, is the wide receiver position, specifically a true number one or someone that you feel comfortable pairing with Michael Wilson as maybe a 1A, 1B, or two high-end upper-tier wide receivers. And we'll see if really Michael Wilson can develop into that kind of a wide receiver. But so far, so good in year one.
Yeah, when it comes to the need, the medium, low, high, the wide receiver position is probably the number one that has high with like exclamation points right next to it, because that is, especially in this draft class, it's a loaded draft class when it comes to wide receiver. And truthfully, if you don't take a wide receiver at number 4, 27, and then you maybe take one at 35, you know, hypothetical here, that's still a potential wide receiver one with how deep this draft class truly is. Now, there's kind of tiers to it. You have the Marvin Harrison Jr.'s, Malik Nabers, Rome Odunze as like your top. Then you have Brian Thomas Jr., and then it starts to kind of go down a little bit, and you can see differences between those wide receivers. Still, though, those are still really quality wide receivers down at the mid-tier of the draft board. So it'll be very interesting to see ultimately what the Cardinals decide to do, what Monty Ossenfort decides to pull the trigger on. But you are assuming and hoping, as a fan and somebody that's trying to look at the grand scope of what this offense could look like, that you could find a true wide receiver one in this draft class.
Cardinals currently have 9 wide receivers under contract. We mentioned Michael Wilson. You've got Zach Pascal, Greg Dortch just re-signed, Chris Moore added as a free agent. Then you've got 5 players who were signed to futures contract. But when you talk about Wilson, Pascal, Dortch, and Moore, those are just not names that they have not done enough as far as to be considered top tier wide receivers. I think Michael Wilson is knocking on that door. Need to see a little bit more from him, and then everyone else kind of fills that supplemental role to what would be a true number one wide receiver. So yes, wide receiver, a high need. Does it come at number 4? Does it come later in the first round? Does it come multiple times, day 1 and day 2? I could even see a wide receiver selected on day 3, where this team a couple of years ago drafted 3 different wide receivers. They were later round wide receivers. But just because now we know what Monty is looking for, talking about GM Monty Ossenfort, what he's looking for in these wide receivers, he wants tall, physical wide receivers who are not afraid to block. And of course, you ask Jonathan Gannon what he wants, someone who gets open and catches the ball. You want that from every wide receiver, but I do think there is a type. You got to be tall, you got to be physical, and you got to be willing to stick, as Ron Wolfley likes to say, your face in the fan.
Oh, yeah. You got to get down and dirty with it when you come to that wide receiver spot, because if you want to catch the ball, you got to do your end also when you're trying to run block as well, and that's something that this wide receiver unit, I mean, you saw the development of Trey McBride. I understand he's a tight end, but once he truly developed himself as a run blocker, it opened up the pass game for him, especially from week 10 on when Kyler Murray returned, and you could see, you know, Trey McBride blossom into the top 5, top 7 tight end that he finished the season ending up as. Yes, Monty has a type, and I did an article about the type that Monty likes when it comes to, you know, the player. It's the 27, 28-year-old, although Chris Moore, I believe, is in his 30s, 31. The average age was right around 27, 28 when it came to free agency additions. When it comes to that wide receiver room, it's above 6 feet tall. With that being said, I think that there's a lot of players that you need to also kind of fill the shoes that you're going to be replacing a Hollywood Brown and a Rondale Moore with. Smaller wide receivers like a Malachi Corley right out of Western Kentucky. I love that player. He's 5'11", reminds me a lot of Deebo Samuel because he's able to run block. He's able to get open. He's able to use that speed both on the outside and from inside the slot. But those top wide receivers on the top of the board, they fit the exact mold as to what Monty kind of has put together and constructed in that wide receiver room, what that type seems to end up being in a sense.
And those top 3 wide receivers, according to reports on Friday, Marvin Harrison Jr. was in town for a top 30 visit. On Monday, Rome Odunze, according to reports, is in town on a visit. Malik Nabers has already had, according to reports, a top 30 visit. And then over the weekend, Jalen McMillan, the Washington wide receiver, was in town on a reported visit. But you look at these names that have come into town so far, and there are almost 20 names that have been reported. Almost half of those names, though, are from the wide receiver position. 7 different wide receivers have now been in town for a visit, reportedly, and it does speak to the need, the depth, and then I think the need again, because I do believe that you'll see more than one wide receiver drafted in a couple of weeks.
You need somebody that's able to go out there and make a big-time play. And right now, with the names that we mentioned earlier, and Michael Wilson, Greg Dortch, Zach Pascal, those were players that really were not. I mean, Michael Wilson showed a lot of flashes. That was great. Greg Dortch had two receptions in the beginning half of the season until Kyler Murray came back, and then finished with 24 receptions, 280 yards, when he, up until week 10, it was two receptions for four total yards. So you were able to see flashes as to what Greg Dortch can look like in this offense. Now with Rondale Moore not there, he kind of slides into that role of that scat back, having this explosiveness, ability to go make a big-time play, which we saw a lot of in Week 16 and Week 17 against the Bears and the Philadelphia Eagles. But you need somebody out there that is able to go make a big-time play. And that's why, you know, cast a wide net. See who you're able to bring in there, because there is talent that you could bring in on a day two or a day three. Yes, number four overall, that's going to be the draft slot that's circled by every team in the NFL, it seems like, with the reports of trades potentially happening or whatever it could be, because they know the value that number four could be. They also recognize the type of generational talent that a Marvin Harrison Jr. could be, the type of stars that Malik Nabor and Rome Odunze could be. This is a very loaded class, and when you're able to cast a net that wide, we're able to bring in McMillan and have him say, hey, you are not the top name on anybody's draft board right now, but let's see if you're able to fit the what pays the price of admission, as Jonathan Gannon likes to say.
We're hearing or seeing, reading more mock drafts that have the Cardinals trading out of number four. Then you have Field Yates, and his latest mock draft goes with the status quo, quarterbacks 1, 2, 3, and Marvin Harrison Jr. at number four. And then Field Yates writes what I think maybe many people leave, and that is, quote, this feels too good to overthink it. As the pro-ready Harrison, who has as much upside for his position as any other player in the class, would fill what is now Arizona's most obvious need at wide receiver. End of sentence. And, of course, you take into account that Rondale Moore traded to the Atlanta Falcons. Hollywood Brown signs a free agent deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. You lose two weapons in that room. Who's replacing those players? You did add Chris Moore. You brought back Greg Dortch, who really wasn't going to go anywhere. Those, again, you need more in that room, and that's why I do think you will see multiple wide receivers selected and possibly even a wide receiver added post-draft, a veteran to have some experience in that room, if for nothing else, just to kind of lead those young players along, kind of teach them the ropes, and then maybe get on that football field for a little bit.
Exactly. I think that people are saying that the draft is the be-all, end-all, in a sense. And you mentioned the ability to bring in a veteran a little bit later on. Right now, that room is very young. And Zach Pascal is a little bit more of a veteran. Chris Moore is a veteran. But beyond that, everybody else is very young in that room. Having a veteran presence, we were able to see how much a Zach Ertz helped a Trey McBride, how much a Jeff Swaim helped a Trey McBride, how much a DJ Humphries helped a Paris Johnson Jr. When you're able to have veterans in the room, it truly does trickle down throughout the room. And yes, Hollywood Brown, he was still kind of getting his footing in Arizona in a sense. So he wasn't that typical veteran, although he did make his mark within that room. He wasn't that typical veteran that has been established with the team for years and, you know, had his footing in a sense and was able to bestow tons of wisdom. I'm sure he still was able to, and with the matter of looking through film. But when you're able to bring a veteran wide receiver into the fold, or a veteran in any position, that automatically makes your room a lot better, regardless if the impact is shown on the field. What it's able to do in the locker room and in the meeting rooms, that's when veteran pieces are able to be the case. Now, going back, though, to what Field Yates said, this is a very great position to be in if you're Monty Austin Ford. Do you overthink it in a sense and recognize that you could bring in a haul of draft picks potentially and have that quarterback surcharge, as Paul Calvisi likes to say? Or do you just select the best player available? And in that case, it's going to be one of those wide receivers.
Who do you have on this roster in that wide receiver room? Again, just wide receiver, not tight end, not running back. Wide receiver. Who do you have in that room that, one, Kyler Murray trusts, two, coaching staff trust inside the 20-yard line, inside the 5-yard line, third and long. Everyone knows the ball is going to that side of the field because that's where that wide receiver is lined up, and you're going to throw it to him no matter what because they are that talented. They are that number one wide receiver. Michael Wilson, again, knocking on the door to be that guy. Other than that, there is no one in that room currently that you feel comfortable with being that guy. That's why everyone says high need, and it is a very high need. It was a high need going into the offseason when free agency began. Didn't add anyone outside of Chris Moore. Still remains a high need.
I think you were able to see a little bit of those flashes that you could trust to Greg Dortch, But the thing Jonathan Gannon has consistently pointed out is that Greg Dortch needs to be more consistent, that he shows those abilities to get out there and make big-time plays in a game or two here and there. But to do it for 17 games and hopefully trying to get into the playoffs, when you're able to do something like that consistently, then you're able to develop that trust. I'm not sure necessarily if that guy is in the room with Kyler Murray right now, because Michael Wilson is knocking on the door. Greg Dortch has shown glimpses. You know, Zach Pascal, there really wasn't much time for him to get out there. But we're able to see, too, that the chemistry, Kyler Murray and Hollywood Brown, they are supposed to be best friends. And on the field, I mean, off the field, they're probably, you know, great. Everything is, you know, fine and dandy. But on the field, that connection was not able to fully develop. And injuries play a role into that, and that's the tough part of the game. But then again, you bring in a rookie wide receiver, that's somebody that has not touched an NFL football field, and they're going to have that upwards climb of trying to develop that trust with K1. And regardless of who it is, you're bringing new pieces into the room. This isn't a rebuild. I know Jonathan Gannon doesn't like to say it, but you're rebuilding what you want the roster to look like. You're reconstructing it. And that wide receiver room is going to have an entirely different facelift compared to this past season.
A reset, maybe. Maybe that was a year ago, the reset. Now, to your point, it's the reconstruction adding to what you built a year ago. So that's wide receiver. Before we get into the other four position groups on the offense, real-time update. Our team photographer, Caitlin Epps, in our Slack channel amongst our department, we have been eclipsed. So they are enjoying the solar eclipse. Yet again, I go back to the window behind you, and there is nothing changed as far as any inkling of it getting any darker than what it is right now.
They are still mowing the grass.
So it happened, and happened as we are here doing Cardinals cover two.
See, this is why I said this is overrated. This is overrated.
I didn't see anything.
I mean, that photo of Paul is great.
Yeah, it's tough.
It's Paul wearing the solar eclipse glasses.
My guess is at Paul Calvisi, those photos will appear at some point on social media.
As they should. But like what did I like? Did I miss something?
Nope. Still got that blue sky. Those clouds haven't moved any. So
this is disappointing.
Well, you got to wait 20 years, 2024. August 2024 is the next time there will be a solar eclipse that you can see here in the U.S.
Clip the very beginning part of this and let it stand on the record that I said that this was the most overrated thing, and we got eclipsed right here in the valley and we didn't even realize it.
But we're not in the path of totality. So we were going to get a partial eclipse.
I am. Okay. There's a ton of totality surrounding how overrated this thing is.
Very well said. All right. So let's get back to the draft primer, offensive edition. Quarterback, tight end, running back, offensive line. That's what's ahead this week, Tuesday through Friday. Quarterback, again, I have not seen these articles. In fact, they have not been posted, but sometimes I get an inkling of where you're going. But I'm looking at quarterback. My guess is this is a low need as far as a draft. And if they do draft a quarterback, that might say more about Clayton Tune than anything else.
It could. It definitely could. There's a chance that you could bring somebody in day three. I've seen a lot of mock drafts mocking Jordan Travis out of Florida State and, you know, Joe Milton from Tennessee. I've seen a lot of those guys in round six, you know, a little bit later on day three. There's also a chance you bring somebody in as an undrafted rookie and you're able to just bring him in into your training camp roster and ultimately see what you're able to have come of it. When you bring in a Desmond Ridder, that I heading into this a draft season, I kind of had it a little bit as a medium need because I felt that you did need a third quarterback in the roster and in the room. Jonathan Gannon has said he likes having three quarterbacks in that room. Before Desmond Ridder got there, it was just Kyler Murray and Clayton Tune. So I was assuming that maybe it's going to be more so a guarantee that you would draft somebody in that, you know, day three slot. If that is the case, then it could say a little bit about Clayton Tune. He had one shot in the game against Cleveland. And that did not turn out well for anybody within the Arizona Cardinals facility. It was an embarrassing and very challenging loss. But then again, you were going into that new, you know, you're starting to transition. You just sent Josh Dobbs off to Minnesota. You put everybody, it was a very tough spot. But you also were knocking on the doorstep of knowing that Kyler Murray was potentially going to be returning. And I think that excitement, you know, definitely kind of makes you say, all right, the game against Cleveland, forget about it. Zach, what did we just talk about? I don't even know, Craig. It didn't even happen. We didn't even just talk about it. But, you know, Clayton Toon has shown a lot of promise. The coaching staff has spoken very highly of it. Desmond Ridder has spoken very highly of Clayton Toon as well. But training camp, once that comes around, you know, Clayton Toon's no longer the rookie.
It's going to be a big offseason for him. Cardinals will add a fourth quarterback because you want that fourth arm in camp. It's just a matter of what's that fourth arm. Is it a veteran out there? Is it a young player, undrafted? I'd be surprised if one of the 11 current draft picks the Cardinals have, that one would be made for a quarterback unless someone falls that they really like. And it's more of a development, and I think you could use maybe that pick on our next position group, and that would be running back. You know you've got James Conner. You know you've got Michael Carter. You added DJ Dallas, which I think is more probably for special teams, yeah, but can certainly run the football. So you've got five running backs in there with Amari DiMercato and Tony Jones, who you brought back on a futures deal. Wouldn't surprise me if the Cardinals drafted a running back. I just don't think it's a low – well, I don't see it as a high need. I really don't even see it as a medium need, at least from my perspective.
I probably will put it as a low. The thing is, and this is what I want our AZ Cardinals, you know, listeners and readers to understand, that's always the thing that I struggle with the most, is deciding, because you do have the pieces in the room. These are NFL players. You have guys in there already, and you're bringing in a college prospect and saying you're making that big jump. You're getting called up to the show in a sense. Let's see what you're able to do. And in a position like the wide receiver room, you need that. You 100% need somebody to come up and make an impact and make a splash. The running back room, they have their big-time players already in James Conner, in Michael Carter, in Amari DiMercato in third-down packages. But having a new back coming in, potentially like a Blake Corum or the running back from Tennessee, whatever, or the running back from Kentucky, there's a bunch of different players out there that you could possibly have if they slide towards the latter half of day two, beginning half of day three. If you have a Blake Corum, you know, sliding in, he's very similar in my mind to a power back like James Conner, but also has the shiftiness and the ability to break free like a Michael Carter. And I was able to see that whenever Michigan was on the national stage. You were able to see it against Ohio State, or you were able to see it in the national championship. That team, there's those players made big time plays when it mattered most.
If you're looking past this upcoming season, this is last season for James Conner under contract. So do you draft a running back with the projection that that is Conner's replacement? And do you do that on day two, early in day three? Or are those picks maybe better utilized for positions that might surface more this year? And then the running back, again, James Conner, will get banged up. That's just the nature of the job. It's how he runs. You can prepare all offseason, and he does a great job getting his body ready for football, but you are going to get nicked up. Hopefully he doesn't miss any time at all, but it is a position where you have to go in and forecast, all right, what happens if? What's our plan B, C, D?
And this could be the draft that it happens because you do have 11 selections. It's not like you only have a few spots where you're like, okay, I have a few needs. I mean, I have a lot of needs and only a few picks to do it. The Cardinals have a lot of needs and a lot of picks to answer a lot of those, you know, questions. Start putting a little bit more of an exclamation point next to that and erasing that question mark away and saying, this is the position group we need. Not like, oh, is this the position group we want to target? Because you have 11 picks, you are able to ask that question. And running back, knowing James Conner's contract, and even though he is the blueprint and Jonathan Gannon has immense amount of respect for James Conner back there, the running back position is a group as a whole that has really struggled getting the value that it deserves financially, A, and that was something that was talked about in the beginning half of training camp, was the Zoom call that all the running backs had in the very beginning that James Conner said he wasn't a part of. But when his contract's going to be, you know, coming to an end, that's going to be an area that he's going to selfishly and rightfully so have to be mindful of.
No guaranteed money on Conner's last year, but I do expect him to be RB1 going into this season. Again, he is someone that I think everyone looks to in that offensive room. Yes, Kyler Murray is your face of the franchise, but really the heartbeats on that offense, everyone else follows Conner's lead on the field, off the field. Soft-spoken, but very loud. He is heard when he's on the football field. So that's a position where, again, first round, no. Second round, no. Third round, perhaps, again, just how to – depends on how that board falls to you and how you rate these running backs, these young running backs. And, again, if you're going to draft a running back in the third round, you expect them to play more than just special teams. But if you've got Michael Carter, you've got DeMarcado, now all of a sudden that's a loaded room as far as the numbers are concerned. And then, of course, you've got five right now. You're not carrying five once the regular season begins.
Yes, but we've also seen how much of a emphasis that Jonathan Gannon likes to have running backs on the practice squad, whether it was Damian Williams, Tony Jones Jr., Darren Harlow. There was a bunch of different running backs that were on the practice squad and on the active roster. They've had no shortage of being able to rotate running backs, especially when James Conner did come in. So it wouldn't surprise me to see them bring in a few more, because right now they just have the four with Tony Jones Jr. on that futures deal. If you do, you know, whoever it is, if you do decide to bring in a running back, I'm assuming you'll have a few more once training camp, you know, comes around, and that room will definitely expand. But you could find a really solid future RB1, RB2 in the mix later on in this draft.
Last position group on offense, offensive line. Right now you've got 15 players in there. You're pretty much set at the tackle position, perhaps. Center, you know, you got Yelda Froholtz. The guard, there still is a hole on the left side unless you're moving Will Hernandez from left to right. From right to left, then you've got a hole now on the right side. So at least as we discussed offensive line with respect to the draft, I'm going to put this as medium, borderline high, because there's five positions in that offensive line. And what are you going to do at the center position after this year? Yelda Froholtz, a free agent to be after 2024. Evan Brown signed a one-year deal. Who's on this team in 2025? Not named Paris Johnson Jr. as far as the offensive line is concerned. Jonah Williams signed him for 2 years, but I don't even think that means you're not looking to take a tackle at some point, maybe even on late day one, day two.
If you have somebody you're able to develop, why wouldn't you want to bring in a tackle that you're able to kind of keep in the mix and ultimately see what is able to happen, whether you keep them on the interior? There's a lot of tackles in this draft that played tackle in college that are likely to move into the guard spot once they make it to the NFL. Now you also have the ability and the flexibility and the versatility to be able to move him to the outside if needed. And that's something that Monty Austin Ford said that he loves, and that's something he values, is a player that comes in with that versatility. We were able to see that with Paris Johnson Jr. when going into the season, you knew he was going to be playing right tackle because you had your franchise tackle in DJ Humphreys last season. Obviously, the injury ultimately ended up parting ways with DJ. Because of that, you were able to bring in Jonah Williams. Now that versatility that was talked about around draft time now comes back into the mix. Do you keep Paris on the right side? Do you keep him on the left side? The interior, though, is the most important part right now, because Will Hernandez has experience on both sides, left guard, right guard. You like him at right guard because you like that pairing with Paris Johnson Jr., or you could possibly move him to the left side and still have that left side pairing with him and Paris if Paris ultimately decides to move left. Regardless, there are a lot of guards, a lot of interior offensive linemen that, whether it's pick 27, 35, 66, 71, whatever it might be, there are a lot of interior linemen that you could find that could right away be put into the mix. And you do have to think about the future, because a lot of the players that they brought in, Tristan Colon, Elijah Wilkinson, Keith Ismail, these are players that are now coming in on one-year contracts. So you're going to run into the same situation next offseason anyway.
You know, as we talk here, I'm going to talk myself into changing the priority at offensive line to high.
Oh, yeah.
I was borderline medium high. Now it's just
strictly high. So I was convincing.
It's okay, yes, you convinced me. And just looking at the roster, and what convinced me more than anything, outside of your brilliant knowledge,
thank you,
is the fact that what I mentioned earlier, how many of these guys are under contract in 2025? There are two offensive linemen under contract for 2025, Paris Johnson Jr. and Jonah Williams. And that is
what about John Gaines?
Oh, you're right. You know what? We always forget about John Gaines. Can't forget about John Gaines. You're right.
That's what happens when you get injured your rookie
season. Out of sight, out of mind.
Out of sight, out of mind.
That's not good.
But I do believe that once he does come into the mix, You know, I do believe that John Gaines could potentially make an impact. He seems like a very humble, soft-spoken guy from the handful of times I was able to speak to him before, you know, his injury. And then I spoke to him a few weeks ago for a story about a business venture that he was taking part in with a handful of other Arizona Cardinals. And he was saying how he's rehabbing and it just made him that much more hungrier to get out onto the field.
Good call, Zach.
Thank you.
It's a name that should be top of mind, but when you're not on the football field, you're not seeing a lot, yeah, you get forgotten about, and that's kind of what happens when guys are on IR. You get forgotten about, and no excuse on my part, but you're right. John Gaines is under contract for 2025 and someone that I do think needs to be talked about a lot more, because going into last season, when he was hurt, talking about Gaines, Jonathan Gannon mentioned that there was going to be a role for the rookie. And then he gets hurt, and now someone else had to fill that role. Now, JG wasn't specific as far as the role, whether that was going to be backup center, possibly in the mix to play left guard, but he was going to be active. At least that's how I took it. He was going to be active. Gaines was going to have a uniform on game day, play special teams, be in the mix, potential injury as far as offensive line play, but that's another name. So you've got three offensive linemen right now that are under contract for next season or past next season outside, and that's why now all of a sudden you convince me, just talking out loud, yes, offensive line, because you've got five different spots there, whether that's center, interior, or on the tackle side. It's a high need when you have 11 picks.
And when there's a draft class like this where you know that you're going to have some long-term players that you're able to bring in because of the draft status and the rookie contracts that you're ultimately going to be able to sign them to, you start to have your future a little bit more figured out. You don't have to stress about it as much, because I'm sure Monty's looking at the board and he's saying, wow, we only do have those three players right now under contract. We are going to have the same conversation again next season. How can we, put a fork in the road right there and address that now, so that we don't run into this problem? And hopefully this coaching staff believes, and a lot of analysts do believe, which is, when you look at a 4-win team, and I know that, like somebody like Kyle Brandt's like, oh, I don't mean to be offensive, but they're the best 4-win team that I've seen. If I'm a player, yes, like I kind of, that's like a backhanded compliment a little bit, but this is a football team that they have a lot of the pieces, and you're bringing in more pieces that you could switch from a 4-win team to an 8-win team, a 9-win team, who knows, run the gauntlet a little bit and potentially make a playoff spot. Now, that's, it's ambitious and it's hopeful, but if that does happen at the end of the season, what players do you have coming back? Because you don't have them, especially with those that are not under contract.
Offensive line, no, it's not a target when you talk about if the Cardinals stay at number 4, but if they should drop to 11, 12, 13, then I could see tackle certainly being someone that they, or a position that they take a look at. You drop down to 27 or 35 early in that second round. Field Yates, in the second round, his latest mock draft, had the Cardinals at 35, selecting Oregon center Jackson Powers Johnson, who can play guard.
He has him sliding out to 35.
Yeah, so that's
interesting.
It's someone that has been kind of a fringe first round late in the 20s, but here is Jackson Powers Johnson available. And again, this is Field Yates' latest mock draft at number 35, the nation's best center, the Remington Trophy Award winner, who does have the experience and the ability to play guard. You sign or you draft someone like that, and yeah, you're just sliding over to your left, to your right, to play the guard position, but you have experience in the event you need help at the center spot.
If I was Drew Petzing, which I'm not,
thankfully,
when they do trot out for week one, they're not going to be looking to the sidelines and hoping to see Zach Gershman calling the shots, thankfully in that case. But I do think that the relationship between Yelda Froholt and Kyler Murray cannot be, I don't want it to be messed around with, truthfully. Like, you bring in a center that played center in college, great. Try to figure out a way to move him to guard, because I think that Yelda Froholt proved that he can be a really solid starting center in the NFL. He showed a lot of flashes, and then that chemistry with Kyler Murray continued to develop. And I think with having a full offseason, a full training camp going into week one with a handful of preseason games sprinkled in there, I don't think that relationship with Kyler Murray should be you know, should be impacted at all. I think that Yeldafrol proved enough this past season, 2023, that he should be the starting center in 2024. That doesn't mean, though, that you can't bring in a guard or you can't bring in a center and try to slide him over into guard. And then when Yeldafrol's contract is up, you either decide to bring him back or you have that ability and that versatility to slide somebody in.
Agree, though I'll say this. There was just 8 games with Kyler and Froholtz. I don't know how much time they were able to work on their own, but that chemistry that you hope to develop in the offseason, there was none of that. Kyler had none of that with anybody because it was focused on the rehab. So you wonder, okay, we're looking to upgrade this center spot. Is that Froholtz coming back for year 2 with a full offseason with Kyler? Is that Evan Brown, who you just brought in? Or is that someone that you just drafted who then would have a full offseason to work with QB1? Though I'm of the opinion, much like you, it sounds like, I want Froholt to remain your starting center because, at least from my vantage point, I saw nothing that would say, all right, this position needs to be better. Again, I don't know how he graded out, but from what I could see, whether that was from the press box or watching on television, there were no issues as far as that center quarterback exchange or a lot of pressure from the interior, at least where Froholt was beat. Wasn't perfect, but I thought he played a very solid center position, which he had hardly any experience going in to last year.
It's such an underrated part, too, is like, I know we keep talking about, like, well, you know, 3 different quarterbacks had to play. Well, that's 3 different quarterbacks that Yeldafrol had to snap the ball to. He had to get there's a very special relationship between the center and the quarterback, especially when it comes to hand placement, especially when you do that under center. And when you're able to do that, and we saw how much Kyler Murray developed as an under center quarterback this past season, putting up numbers that he hasn't seen in his previous seasons with the Arizona Cardinals since coming into the league, being mostly that shotgun quarterback. With him being under center, you were able to see that chemistry develop. But as a center, it's not easy when you have somebody else in the backfield multiple times throughout the season. That you never want to have your backup quarterback playing. You never want to have 2 different backup quarterbacks playing and not know who you're going to be snapping the ball to truly until week 10, and then there was an added level of consistency. But it goes back to what we were saying about the wide receiver spot. No matter who you're bringing in, they're going to have to develop trust with Kyler Murray. And that it was only 8 games. It was just that sample size. But I think that Yeldafrol showed a lot. He was not, when you were watching film, it didn't seem like, oh, that center position, that's where there are some holes. That needs to be addressed. Yeldafrol, I thought, did a really solid job holding it down.
So the Draft Primers offensive end are up or will be up this week on azcardinals.com. Monday, wide receivers and then quarterback, tight end, running back, offensive line will follow. Defense is in next week or a week from Monday as far as those positions. We'll talk about that next time we have Zach here in studio. The one other thing as far as the draft, one, April 25th is the date. Thursday, April 25th, the draft party, once again, presented by Arizona Ford Dealers. It is returning to the Great Lawn outside State Farm Stadium, hosted by our colleague, Paul Calvisi. There will be Cardinals alumni, Big Red, cheerleaders. There's a post-draft fireworks show. All of this is free, the admission and parking. You do need tickets, however. Go to azcardinals.com/draft party. That is azcardinals.com/draft party. To be amongst Cardinal fans when the Cardinals are on the clock at 4, do they stick and pick, or do they trade down 11, 12, 13, or maybe just a couple of spots to number 6? Those are the kind of the teams, the spots that we've really been talking about when it comes to the Giants, the Raiders, the Vikings, and the Broncos.
Whoever it's going to be, that's the question that everybody wants to know. And those fans in attendance are going to be able to get a really solid treat once that player does come in, because, you know, that's the pride of the Arizona Cardinals fan base. They're all going to be able to celebrate together. This is a very monumental draft for the Arizona Cardinals. This could be franchise-altering draft because of the type of talent that you have coming in, and it is not always an opportunity to have this type of draft class to put it together and to make it happen. This type of board and the way that, you know, it is set up, it doesn't happen every year. It's like the solar eclipse. It happens once every 20, and even then it doesn't always happen.
That's true. It's still bright outside, and it's, yeah.
When we were walking in, I told you my college roommate texted me talking about the solar eclipse in Mexico. He just texted me, was it sick? And I just wrote, didn't even see it. Overrated.
Yeah,
so Michael,
missed it.
Don't worry. And he said, boo. He's right. Boo.
Yeah, just completely missed it. Now we got 20 years to wait for the next one in 2044.
Oh, yeah. Be ready.
Last thing, as we talk draft, I want to give you the chance to either gush about this player or steer the Cardinals away from this player because, again, in addition to Roma Dunze on Monday, reports have Penn State edge rusher Chop Robinson in town for a top 30 visit.
Chop's incredible.
Okay, there we go.
No, I will say, and I've seen he's a great edge rusher. He didn't really have the sack numbers at Penn State, but I'm telling you, he is a dog. Like, that's the type of player that Nick Rawls likes, that high motor, violent player. I saw that firsthand with Chop Robinson at Penn State. I saw him terrorizing Big Ten quarterbacks, and it's not always easy to get by a Big Ten offensive line, and I saw Chop Robinson do that a lot. If the Cardinals do decide to, you know, select Chop, he will be a great talent to possibly have. You hope that those stats translate to the NFL. But just looking at him, his physical appearance, there is a player that, like, you look at and you're like, okay, that player was developed in a lab. Chop Robinson's that player.
6'3", 254, four sacks last season, 5.5 in 2022. He did meet with the Cardinals at the Combine where he ran a 4.4 8.40.
And he called that. He called it ahead of time. He went on
going to run under 4.5.
He went on Mike Florio's show, and he said he was going to run a 4.4. And he put up a 4.4. And to do that as an edge rusher, whoo!
More impressive, he posted the fastest 10-yard split for an edge rusher weighing more than 250 pounds. And to me, I don't care how fast you run the 40, how quickly are you getting off the line of scrimmage? And that's where that 10-yard split comes into play. Do you have that explosiveness once the ball is snapped? Can you get into the backfield quickly? Sacks sometimes don't always tell the story, but are you affecting the opposing quarterback, getting in their face, forcing incompletions, forcing turnovers? And the Cardinals, we do know, little hint, yeah, they need help at the edge rush.
Oh, they definitely do need help. And once again, you're very lucky with the board shaping out the way that it is. This is a loaded class at edge rusher as well. I feel like a broken record saying, like, oh, just insert plug and play position. Like, this is, they're loaded in offensive linemen, edge rushers, linebackers are really good, safeties, cornerbacks. Like, there's a lot of different positions in this year's draft where you could say, all right, they're loaded. And I think edge rusher, no matter who you possibly do decide to select, and you will likely select an edge rusher in this year's draft, you're going to have somebody that makes a really important and really dominant, solid impact.
And if you want to be a part of the action at the Great Lawn outside State Farm Stadium, again, night one of the draft, Thursday, April 25th, 4 to 9, admission, parking, both free. You do need digital tickets. Go to azcardinals.com/draft party for more information. And again, the draft primers this week, it's about the offense, azcardinals.com. Next week, Zach will have the primers on defense. And right now, we're just going to send him and do a bunch of research on solar eclipses so he has a greater appreciation for what the rest of the world is enjoying on this Monday, April 8th.
For what the eye could see, I like seeing, you know, being from the East Coast where it's mostly overcast and, you know, dreary outside, seeing palm trees and a few clouds in the sky. I don't think my eyes are going to tell me anything different.
Yeah,
the solar eclipse is overrated.
Yeah, just that window outside, it's, yeah, blue sky. You didn't see any hint of, like, a flickering or, you know, any kind of, like, a shade, nothing.
I would have loved it. It would have made for great content. Content, content, content.
Yes.
And instead it was just disappointment, disappointment, disappointment.
Well, Cardinals will not disappoint when it comes to the draft.
I have no doubt in Monty Austin for it. I know that guy's going to come into the fold. The video was resurfacing,
yes,
of him making moves in the draft room from last season on that aired on Flight Plan. I have no question in my mind that Monty Ossifort's going to be able to deliver another incredible draft class.
In Monty, we trust.
Oh,
again,
yeah.
Less than 3 weeks until the 2024 NFL draft. Still plenty of time to decide, to discuss and dissect what we think and maybe what the Cardinals should do over those 3 days, and right now with 11 total picks. On that note, we will put a lid on this edition of Cardinals Cover 2 presented by Hyundai, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. As always, special thanks to our executive producer, Jim Almahundro, our associate producer, Cody Fincher. For Zach Gershman, I'm Craig Riolu. We'll talk to you next time here on Cardinals Cover 2.